Aloha and welcome to the Startup Catalyst podcast. I'm your host, Yasmeen Dar. This season, we'll hear insights from minority and women entrepreneurs and investors and how they're striving to make a difference. Today's guest is Brittany Riley, who was the vice president of U.S. Ventures at Village Capital for the last 4 years. When most people picture investors, they think older male in a suit. Brittany Riley breaks those stereotypes. We'll learn how the young female investor got her start in the venture capital industry, from her days as an entrepreneur to her rise in becoming the VP of U.S. Ventures at VilCap. So, Brittany, being very transparent here, my producers and I did a lot of research on you, but it was really hard to find out more about your background and about who you are. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background and coming into the VC space?
Yeah, definitely. So, a bit of background. I definitely come from a startup entrepreneurial side. My very first time doing that was actually in building a restaurant with my brother in college. And I was one of those I had a lot of visions about the change that I could do in the world and was working, studying international studies and human rights, and was thought, you know, I wanted to go work for some large kind of non-diplomacy and nonprofits. And simultaneously, though, was building a restaurant with my brother while in college, and kind of saw the value of the restaurant. We employed 30 people and how that really affected and changed their lives and really empowered them. Mm-hmm. And was really struck with the difference in my experience kind of working in creating a global discourse and starting a restaurant, and kind of immediately was like, I really want to explore this further. I want to see how companies can really change people's lives. And so literally 4 days after I graduated college, I moved to San Francisco to see what that world was all about. And I ended up joining two different companies pre-launch and kind of growing those companies. The second one was called SnapGuide, and it was visual how-to guides. It was I joined the team pre-launch with about 3 engineers. We grew. I was still pretty much the only non-technical person for a long time. And so it was a really good experience in how to build a tech product. And we were able to raise a good amount of money. I think we raised $9 million, and we were pre-revenue for the 2.5-3 years. I kind of had this moment, you know, I had a ton of experience, I'd gotten a ton of experience growing a company, especially being kind of the only non-technical person at a company and really the only one focused on, okay, how do we get people using this? How do we get partners involved with this? How do we actually figure out how to make this sustainable? And but I simultaneously was kind of struck with how much money we were able to raise.
Do you and your brother still have that restaurant, or have you guys sold that?
So my brother actually still runs the restaurant. So and it's definitely grown. You know, it's 4.5 stars on Yelp. So if you're in Seattle, go get yourself some barbecue. I was in college. My brother had just graduated college. And so it was definitely his baby. Mm-hmm. More
Brittany,
than mine.
You talk about this barbecue restaurant. What is the name of it?
It's called Briley's Barbecue.
Oh, Briley's. Okay. Like a combination of you guys, first and last name?
Kind of. Yeah, people always think that. And it's funny because it didn't used to be called that. And the name was, it changed when my brother's partner, business partner came in, who's his best friend, and his last name was Briley. So they say that it was a combination of our last name, like Riley and Briley, but I always tell them, you know, really they named it after me.
Yeah, totally. Of course. Brittany Riley.
So whatever they have to tell themselves, you know.
That's really fascinating too. And what struck me is that you came from a non-tech background. Mm-hmm.
and were able to grow not just SnapGuide, but Zipongo as well. So, so was that pre-Village Capital as well?
Yep. So, you know, at SnapGuide, we were actually going through an acquisition process that was long and taught me a lot about going through acquisitions and what can seem, you know, what seems true or what seems like the path isn't always the path. And we can definitely talk more about that. But it definitely gave me a lot of perspective when helping companies, especially early companies, think through early acquisitions. And so when I was kind of, we were going through that process, we actually like ended one of the deals on the acquisitions, and it was kind of the right time for me to step away. And I, so I was really fascinated with, okay, we were able to raise $9 million for this company. That's cool. You know, doing something that's, valuable, and it makes people's lives, or it makes people happy and helps them share their knowledge. But how do I get money to things I, you know, I think are really, really important and really don't have, any money getting to them right now. So I actually ended up, starting a fellowship program on the impact investing side and met Ross Baird, who's the CEO of Village Capital, and, ended up moving to India just two weeks later. I had left SnapGuide by that point and was kind of ready for a grand adventure. So, and I ended up moving there to start with Village Capital, figuring out kind of, you know, started sourcing companies, started kind of working on the VC side of things for the very first time, actually. From previously, it was all, you know, you're in the details, you're building, you're figuring out how to grow a company, kind of taking that perspective and saying, okay, how do you translate that to what makes a good investment, is kind of where I made the transition into Village Capital.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, I was following your blog last night and I was kind of getting lost in your photos. You're a really good photographer, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm half Pakistani, but I've never been to India. However, I can relate culturally to everything that I was seeing visually. Mm-hmm. That's a side note. But what I really wanted to get into, though, was, you know, with you being in India with Village Capital, what were those challenges like? Because I know there are other people who live in the States and are sourcing out to India to help build their company. But mm-hmm. what were some of the issues that you ran into, and how were you able to problem solve them while you were there physically?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for me, the biggest lesson I learned from working there is that I wasn't the right person to solve the problems there. There's, you know, amazing people in India who really understand the environment. And if I wanted to really be effective, I needed to go back to the U.S. and focus on the problems that were in the U.S. And so that was a big learning lesson for me, because I think when you're really young and excited, you think kind of like, oh, I'm going to go and solve all these problems. and knowing, you know, I'm not the right, I know nothing about agriculture in India, and it's actually, you know, thousands of years of history there. and so kind of getting it was definitely an ego check for me, and a realization of, okay, let's go back home and figure out how to solve these problems that might not seem so sexy because you've been seeing them for your whole life, but you're going to be better equipped. So that was one lesson. I mean, I think working in India, I really needed a challenge. So definitely got a challenge. I definitely experienced a tough time a lot with my age. Was a really difficult thing to get past. I was relatively young, but used to kind of taking, you know, charge when you work from a startup background, especially, you know, you're reporting directly into the CEO if you're even like reporting. You're kind of built, everyone's building, right? And you take on a lot of things that you might not do at a larger company for 10 or 15 years.
Right.
So I kind of came barreling in probably with a lot of kind of that perspective, and got a lot of, well, this person's older, or this person, you know, is Indian, or this person's a man. So I kind of had three strikes against me, and how to kind of navigate that and how to build trust.
How were you able to do that, though, when you were at Village Capital to promote that type of inclusivity because of those challenges that you had already mentioned stacked against you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I like accomplished them, honestly. I was in India about 10 months, and I think it would have taken, I think it would always be there. And that was definitely a realization. I think we got closer for sure. It wasn't, you know, a point of conflict. It was just kind of a daily truth in how we kind of think and where I stand kind of in the work environment. So I mean, obviously, definitely listening, me learning like that I don't know the way, you know, kind of getting that ego check definitely helped on my end. And I think showing, you know, a lot of folks like being there, you know, getting things done, actually showing results always helps, you know, people, especially when you're young, like people are going to always kind of discount you, but they can't ignore when you're actually making things happen or when you're actually making their lives easier or better. Mm-hmm. So I think it was never a point of like, we love each other and and like, this is really, you know, easy, but it definitely was mutual respect was gained in that we kind of need each other.
So when you moved back to the States and rejoined VillCap, did you do anything differently to seek out minority founders or coworkers for the company?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think my first, when I moved back, I was definitely like, for me, everything felt easier because I wasn't dealing with both like trying to do a very difficult job and a massive like cultural a learning curve. Mm-hmm. And so I really realized like just the value, like how much better you are at your job if you really understand also the environment that you're working in. And I think that goes to play with diversity in hiring, right? So I think we actually said after that, like we will do our absolute best to hire local talent globally. So, you know, there were definitely cases where we haven't done that like 100%, but the majority of the team needs to be from there and needs to have, you know, kind of have some of these building blocks that mm-hmm. are going to make them way better at their job. And and that goes in the US as well. I mean, we can't focus on investing, you know, diversifying our pipeline with a bunch of people who have no idea, you know, have never had to kind of overcome that challenge. Mm-hmm. We also think about that from an investment standpoint. When we're investing in folks, you know, we want to see if they have that lived experience with the problem, they're just going to be so much more tied to it and so much better able to solve it. So I think I took that experience and translated it both to our own hiring and growing, and then also to our kind of investment thesis as well.
So while you were at VillCap, in your experience, mm-hmm. do you feel like there was an added degree of difficulty for your startup teams that had female or minority founders to actually get in the door and get funding?
Are we in India or just generally?
In general. I mean, I think mainly for like the States, actually, since...
Yeah. I definitely think there's exceptions to every case, right? Mm-hmm. So I hate to generalize, but you kind of have to do that when having these conversations. Mm-hmm. I definitely think we kind of had multiple pieces going against us. And I'm sure you have experienced this in Hawaii. A lot of the places we were going in, the companies we were looking at are struggling both because of who they are, but also because of where they are. And then also because of what they're focusing on. So... we tried to look at all three of those for reasons why they weren't raising money. And they were usually kind of all a piece of it. And none of them are valid reasons. So, you know, a lot of women or underrepresented folks in tech weren't able to raise money either because of like biases of investors or because of their own networks of people they knew, especially in the early stage. And then, you know, if they're outside of Silicon Valley or New York, they definitely struggled, or they often struggled to make those connections, right? Whether they're a male or a female. And then when you're investing in things that are really risky and take mm-hmm. a long time. You're gonna like your pool has just gotten really, really small, right?
Right.
How I always have thought about that is a kind of from a more of a risks perspective. So I think in venture capital and from my perspective, you're always thinking about de-risking, right? Even though early stage investing is one of the riskiest investments you can make, you're looking for ways to de-risk your investment. And people use these three ways as tools for de-risking. So I know the person and I know they're a good person, right? Or I'm close to them, so I can I can help them. I know this idea, I know this space. I worked in social, or, you know, I worked in consumer tech. So I definitely can help them in that. So what I've thought about is just how can we think of different ways of kind of de-risking these companies? Because those three ways are causing this imbalance.
Okay, so can you tell our listeners who Village Capital is and what they do?
So Village Capital is an investment fund, and the simplest ways to put it. And what they really do is find entrepreneurs all over the world, train them in a really kind of collaborative way. Extreme collaborative way through a multitude of kind of workshops that work with the companies, all very early stage startups, in how to grow and then how to also understand an investor's perspective and evaluate each other. And it's kind of the third piece. So we find and we train companies and we also invest in them. So we invest in them in this, again, very collaborative way where the companies themselves are selecting the investment. And we find that this leads to more diverse investments. It's more additive to the companies than a traditional fundraising process, et cetera. And then we support those companies along their way. So Village Capital, I got a little specific there in kind of how our model works, but, you know, at the core, we're kind of looking at how do we bring money to more entrepreneurs in more overlooked places and overlooked industries.
Interesting. Oh, very cool. Mm-hmm. Okay. So speaking along those lines, what do you feel is one skill that every aspiring entrepreneur should learn?
Just one?
Where should they start?
This is interesting. I'll give you one skill and one trait.
Sure.
On the skill side, I would definitely say problem solving. Building a company is just a series of solving problems. And if you kind of look at it like that way, you'll get through each day and kind of make progress. And it can seem really hard and long and difficult if you don't kind of break it down to a series of problems and find excitement in solving those problems. If you don't like doing that, a 100 times a day or maybe 10 times a day, you probably shouldn't start a company. And also a trait it definitely is important for entrepreneurs. And the reason I mention it is just because we spent the last kind of almost 2 years studying what traits are valuable at the early stage for entrepreneurs. And our goal behind that was to kind of reduce our own bias in looking at like what makes that founder good, strong. You hear a lot of investors say like, oh, they just get it, or, you know, like they're a really strong founder, or you should definitely look at them. And we wanted to challenge ourselves and our own bias on kind of what that means. So we worked with a couple different folks, and this kind of professor out of Stanford, and looked at what are the traits within our kind of the 500 companies or 600 companies that we've worked with, what are the traits and how are they correlated to success? And what we found is like a lot of different traits, and I could go into it, but the one that really struck me was what we call like a self-awareness trait. The most successful companies within that we've worked with, which again is like 600, so mm-hmm. it's a pretty large sample size, are companies that when we interview the founder and when we interview the team, they have the same understanding of that founder's strengths and weaknesses. So they're very reflective of each other. If the founder knows that they have a lot of or says they have a lot of ambition, the team also said that. And I think to me, that is a really big lesson on when you're at the early stage, it's not so important that you have all the skills, right? Or have the perfect set of traits. There's no such thing. You're always going to have huge holes. but really it's okay. Having an awareness about where your strengths are and where your weaknesses are, having a close team that really understands that as well and can kind of fit in within that. So the teams that we found had the worst kind of success, and I could go into how we had teams that had really different understandings. And what that means to me is like both the founder doesn't have, you know, this kind of awareness factor of their own strengths, but also like they are not on the same page.
That's mm-hmm. difficult. So it's definitely realizing your strengths, learning mm-hmm. how to hustle, working really hard. Mm-hmm. Seems like those are the biggest traits that help make companies successful, and being open to room for improvement too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or filling those areas that they're weaker with other folks that are really strong in those areas.
So, you know, as a female investor, did you ever feel like you had issues being taken seriously by startups or even founders? I mean, and not just as a female, but also because of how young you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, and some of it's valid, you know, I am young, and I think the feedback cycles in venture are very slow. Right. So you might make an investment in the early stage, and mm-hmm. it probably will take 7 to 10 years to know if that was a good investment. So I think there is a value in being in this business for a really long time. And when you haven't had that long kind of span, you kind of have to find out, okay, what do I do know? And rest on that. So I definitely had both, you know, I was pretty aware of, okay, this is an industry where time is pretty valuable. Mm-hmm. But I really do know a lot about, you know, I have been on the other side of growing and starting a startup, and I have seen hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of startups, especially as I was at Village Capital longer, at this early stage. So the scale at which I've seen at this very specific stage, I really do know how to help them move beyond that. So I think when you're honest with founders about what you're good at and where you can help them, instead of kind of feeling like you do have to pretend to be like a, you know, like someone that some gray hair that's going to like tell them X, Y, and Z and say like, I've seen this 100 times. I think they kind of, it balances out. I think the other thing I found, as especially as a woman and as someone younger, is gaining confidence when someone does treat you really rudely or dismisses you, to instead of saying like, oh, I need to, you know, I need to get them, to being like, I don't actually want to work with that person and I don't need to. So we definitely had like a no assholes rule. So and that actually developed, because at first, you know, you have this kind of idea of, you know, they're kind of cocky, but they're an entrepreneur and they kind of dismiss me, but I get it. It's okay. And as you gain confidence, you realize like, well, we don't really need to work with someone like that. And that won't be that won't be a really valuable person to bring into our group, especially because what we do is so collaborative.
I think that's a really good tip, though, because I feel like a lot of people think that's the be-all, end-all. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, if I don't land this person, then my career is ruined.
Right.
But it's not just one door slamming in your face. It's actually opportunity to see the other doors that are out there.
Exactly. And you're going to spend all that time on this like really negative person that you could have spent on other people, again, who kind of already have this general understanding, and you can get to all the important stuff anyways. I found that most of those people that were judged were often a lot younger or mm-hmm. like my own age, mm-hmm. who are kind of coming in. A lot of times an older entrepreneur knows that or kind of value knows that every experience is so different. Starting a company is so hard, and they will take all of the help they can get, whoever it's coming from.
Yes, that is the other flip to that coin. So, Brittany, you know, now that you've left VilCap, what's next for you? What can our listeners expect from Brittany Riley in 2018?
Yeah, so I think the first kind of piece of 2018 is definitely about working on myself. So I say I'm still doing a lot of work, but it's all kind of on myself. So I think, and I just mentioned, because I think it is super important for everyone to do. I was kind of traveling and working pretty much nonstop for the last 7 years. And I think I definitely knew I needed to take a step back, and I needed to have some days that had nothing on the calendar, and not just like 2 days, like maybe a couple weeks or maybe. And so that's been really helpful also for not just for for feeling more relaxed, but also creatively. So in terms of what's next, I think that's part of my learning process right now. I will definitely stay in this space. I think I'm really passionate about figuring out how to get more capital to overlooked entrepreneurs. But there's a lot of different ways you can do that. So I think right now it's about taking a step back and thinking creatively about how I want to do that, and whether that's through actually doing it as a startup and growing another company, or staying on the kind of other side.
Investor side. Very cool. So are you working with companies in the States or globally?
All in the States. Yep.
Okay. Very cool. Okay. So I'm going to ask you one of our controversial questions now.
Yep.
What would you say is the critics of the hashtag Me Too movement who say that some women are acting too much like victims when they should be empowering themselves?
I don't know how many people I've actually heard say that.
Interesting.
which kind of I thought was interesting, shows like the bubble that we live in. And I wanted to, I think the important kind of thing to set straight, I guess, and the founder of Me Too talks about a lot in really amazing ways, is just that Me Too is actually not about like accusations or about taking men down. It's about healing. And the reason she started Me Too was actually to help women heal through experiences that they have had that are traumatic. And I think when someone has had a traumatic experience, you know, if someone's in the hospital, right, and had a traumatic experience, you're not saying, don't be a victim. why aren't you empowering yourself? You're kind of saying, okay, this is a survivor, and what can we do to help them heal? And so, to me, that is what the kind of the purpose of Me Too. And to those people that would say you're being a victim, I would say this is not really the point. Mm-hmm. The point is to get in and kind of help women heal through an experience, rather than kind of jumping to the other side of the coin, which is like, what is, you know, like whose accusation is right, whose is wrong, all of that. Like healing, there's no right or wrong. There's no black or white. And I think that's why it's kind of got lost in the conversation, because folks love to have a word, right? And then, or a sentiment, and then get on one side or the other of it. That's what I think I'm seeing with kind of Me Too. Like, do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing? And really, there's no healing, it's just a process. So I think that is what I'd kind of say to people is there's actually not one way or the other, because it's a process in which women are going through, or lots of folks are going through, not just women. Mm-hmm. And your job should be to figure out like how you can help folks heal. Versus kind of getting on one side of the argument.
I thought that was very beautifully said. That was very, very nice. And I agree, like, instead of being dismissive, how are you helping them?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we have our fast minute round. We're going to be asking you some fun and lighthearted questions. Okay, if you could have an unlimited supply of any one thing for the rest of your life, What would it be? Could be sushi, cell phone battery life, Nutella. What do you got?
Oh, the first thing that came to my mind was pizza. Yeah. The second thing was sunshine. So maybe I'll like have pizza and sunshine like together for the rest of my life.
You come here to Hawaii and have pizza on the beach.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Let's see. If you could eliminate one thing from your daily routine, what would it be and why?
Procrastination.
I could definitely add that to my list as well.
Yeah.
All right. And then one last one. In terms of value for money, what is the best product that you've ever bought? It can be anything.
Okay. I think a massage. It's not a product. It's more of an experience. But I actually, someone just yesterday told me that they had never had one. So I bought them one like immediately. Because I think like taking care of your own body and like taking time to invest in your body that carries you through like decades is probably the most important thing you can do. And kind of on that more of a product end, just in the last, I'm definitely a proponent of Allbirds, the shoes. I recommend them to everyone. They really are. They're very like a lot of VCs in the Bay Area have them. So they become like something that people like to make fun of, but they are really so comfortable. They're all made of wool, and everyone I buy them for is just like instantly happy and goes and buys them for someone else. So
wow. What is it called again?
They're called Allbirds shoes.
Allbirds shoes.
They're made of wool and they're called like the world's most comfortable shoe. And I found them maybe like 2 years ago, and I bought them on the internet. It was actually the only thing I've ever bought off a Facebook ad, because the comments were so positive, and I bought them and then subsequently like bought them for so many people since then.
Okay, so I have two more questions for you. Your theme song by Lake Street Dive, Side Pony.
How did you know that?
I have a really good producer who did really great research on you. That is such a catchy theme song. Why is that your theme song?
That's a good question. So
is it the beat? Is it her voice? Is it just the lyrics? Baby, I'm just living my life because I rock a side pony. Yeah, what is it?
Pretty much. Yeah. So I think like I always, you know, I'm never too serious. And so I think it's always my coworker, whenever we play that song, they're like, that is so you, because you know, I can go in and handle a situation, but I'll probably also like have a, you know, just like something that's like definitely not on the serious end about me, like no matter where I am. So, you know, I'm going to do my thing, but then I'm also going to rock a side pony. And I kind of think about that in a lot of different ways, like whatever situation I'm in, like, don't be too serious. Like, you know, what's the thing that's like funny or lighthearted or, most me about this. And, yeah. It's also just a like fun song, right?
I love that. It is such a fun song. You know, it was so catchy and so in my brain this morning. I actually put a side pony on my daughter before I took her to daycare.
Yes.
I was like, that is so cute. I was like, I get it. You do you.
Right?
Yeah. All right, last question. Who are three female or minority founder investors to watch and why?
One is definitely my old boss, Ulili Onakapuri, and I just butchered her last name. She's going to make fun of me. she actually just became, I wanted to say congratulations to her because she just became partner at KPOR. And so, who's an investment fund in Oakland. And she's just an amazing person and has a lot of experience in the space. And it's huge for her to be partner. I think with any industry, you see a lot of women or minorities, like, you know, getting into spaces, but very few moving up.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes me very kind of.
Is that a VC as well?
Yeah. So she's a partner at their VC fund, and she, you know, they invest in impact companies, and they invest in a lot of like diversity as their big goal.
So Lily, and then you have two other people.
Yeah. So another one is Ebony Pope, who now runs, who has a lot of my old job at Village Capital. So I wanted to give her a shout out as well because she's amazing. And she's built out this new kind of initiative within Village Capital to figure out how to diversify the pipeline in cities. So how to kind of de-risk these really early stage companies that are led by women and Latinx and Black founders in these specific cities, and how can we help connect them with early stage capital, like angels, like very early stage capital, so we can diversify our pipeline. And she's brought it to 4 cities, and I think she'll keep bringing it to cities. And she kind of does that on top of a lot of the work at Village Capital, but she's been really innovative and thinking about this problem for a while. So
I love how you pass the torch to another strong female. That's fantastic.
Yes, definitely. And then I wanted to mention one company. So one that came to mind that I love that's ran by 2 women founders is called CNote, like the letter C and then note. It's for the consumer, a high yield, a savings account, but it allows an everyday person to invest in CDFIs. So you're investing in kind of local, in women and minority owned businesses. And in return, you're getting, you know, a 2.5% interest back. So I think it's an awesome, you know, my savings account, like with Bank of America or whatever, was giving me basically nothing. Like, I think I was like paying them more to have my savings account than the interest that I was getting. And so it's a great, really safe place to put some money and to get a good savings account, or, you know, a decent interest. And then, and it's going to, you know, it's obviously aligned with at least my values, and I hope a lot of the values of people. And so it's ran by a woman, Yulia and Kat, and they're, again, just awesome women that have a lot of experience in the banking industry and have built out a great product.
Very cool. We'll definitely be Googling these 3 companies. Yes. And people.
And Allbirds.
And Allbirds, yes. That's a big star next to my notes. That's it for today's episode of the Startup Catalyst podcast. We want to send a big mahalo to our wonderful guest, Brittany Riley. Remember to follow us on Twitter and Instagram for the latest podcast news and updates at Sultan Ventures. And to learn about how you can get involved in startups here locally in Hawaii, go to sultanventures.com. Till next time, aloha.